Good afternoon, Mr. Lurum. It's
good afternoon.
Good
afternoon, Judge. I'm exhausted just after sitting here this morning and listening to all these oral arguments. May it please the court. I would like to begin this morning with the Olson case, which is cited at page 20 of the opening brief and then in the reply brief. As the court knows, this case brings into sharp focus the statute in the Federal Arbitration Act at 5 U.S.C. section 12. The Olson case, this court in the Olson case, addressed how to preserve the three-month limitation, whatever it is, in 9 U.S.C. 12. Toward the end of the opinion, which is cited at page 20, this court stated, since Olson has not alleged that the April 15 award was improperly filed or delivered, and the record would not support such an allegation, he had to file suit within 3 months of the April 15 award to preserve his arguments about the arbitrator's alleged misconduct. The court in Olson then cited a 1996 case, and I am not Greek, Papa Petropoulos versus Milwaukee Transport Service, quoting, this complaint is barred as he failed to file it within the three-month statute of limitation time period contained in 9 U.S.C. section 12. The defendant's position below and here is that 9 U.S.C. is clearly a service limitation. I'm not quite sure what's being served within 3 months, but a service limitation. If that's true, then why did this court, in two different opinions, Olson in 2005 and Papa Petropoulos in 1996, say and hold that the way in which to preserve the argument to vacate an arbitration award under the three-month limitation period is to file suit?
Maybe that was just a mistaken choice of words, because the statute, of course, talks about service.
Well,
and delivery, not filing.
Judge, as a practitioner who relies on this court's holdings twice, we have two different cases saying that to file suit is the way to preserve the three-month limitation. I happen to agree with that, as you know, in my analysis, because when you go back to the legislative history of 9 U.S.C. 12, the statute is taken from a New York statute in 1925, and under New York procedure, the way to commence an action is to serve a notice of motion.
Look, the statute of limitation in Section 12 provides that notice of a motion to vacate or modify an award must be served within 3 months after the award was filed or delivered. When are you arguing that an award is filed?
Well, I'm saying in this case, the original award was delivered to my office by mail.
Email.
Delivered, the signed award. The email transmission doesn't count for purposes of starting the three-month limitation.
Well, all right.
But I think it's good to focus on this. Notice of motion to vacate is to be served. All right. Now, how do you start a federal action under Rule 3, under the Federal Rules of Procedure, with a motion or a notice of motion?
Well, what legal basis is there for believing that Section 12 has been superseded by Rule 3? Has any court ever held as such?
Well, here's the analysis. Rule 81A3. First of all, yes, in a way, indirectly, Olson, this court, has held that the way to preserve the action to vacate under 9 U.S.C. 12 is to file suit. Now, the analysis isn't there. However, Rule 81A3 provides that if a procedure is not provided for in the Arbitration Act, then the procedures provided for in the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure control. And this court has held, because the federal rules really are promulgated by statute enacted by Congress, that they do control. Okay? Now, when you take a look at the legislative history, you have to go back into the archives to figure this out. Notice of motion to vacate comes from the New York procedure. And the New York State procedure, you start an action when you file a notice. You don't start an action, when you serve a notice.
The statute doesn't speak to commencement of actions and starting an action and filing an action. It talks about service.
Okay.
Service of a notice on the opponent. That's what the statute of limitation deals with. It's not a commencement of an action kind of statute of limitations. It's a service kind of statute of limitations. There are different kinds of statutes of limitations.
Well, Judge, I agree and I disagree, because this court said that the way to preserve is to file.
Right, and I've already suggested that was perhaps an unfortunate choice of words, because it doesn't use the statutory language.
Then I respectfully answer the court the following way. What do you serve? Do you serve a motion? How do you start an action with a motion? You can't. But when you go back into the legislative history, even though it doesn't say complaint, even though it doesn't say action, it doesn't say notice of action. The defendants characterize it as a notice of action. That's their position on appeal. It doesn't say notice of action. It doesn't say complaint. It doesn't say any of that. How does this statute work if you take it literally? If you go on into the body of the statute, by gosh, if the party, the winning party, is a resident of a district where the award was not awarded, where the award didn't take place, the U.S. Marshal must serve the motion. When's the last time a U.S. Marshal served a motion? And how do you begin this procedure in federal court under the federal rules? And I respectfully submit that 81A3 would control here. And Rule 81A3 says if a procedure isn't provided for in the Arbitration Act, then the other procedures in the FRCP control. So how do you begin? You begin with a complaint. That's how you begin. Now, service of the complaint, is that service of a notice of motion? They've conceded that service of the complaint is the right way to do it, but that's not what the statute says. But we can't ignore the legislative history. And the legislative history in the case law that dealt with this statute early says that it was borrowed verbatim from a New York statute.
You're in your rebuttal time, you know.
I'm sorry, Judge.
No, I'm not sorry. I just want to call your attention
So the issue, the first issue, is that filing does toll the statute, and secondly, the email delivery doesn't count. There's no authority for that at all. The statute says the award must be delivered, the original award. Email can be mistaken, it can be distorted, it can be fraudulent. Even though this was a AAA proceeding, and the delivery, by the way, under the rules, is by mail, and it was delivered to me on the 9th of January, and everything was filed.
No, delivery is complete upon mailing, which occurred on the 4th.
The legal delivery was complete upon mailing, but that doesn't mean delivered to me. And the Sargent case is controlling on that. The Sargent case controls this by saying that the award, the original award, must be placed into the hands of the losing party. There's no evidence that the mailing here was in fact on the 4th. There's no affidavit of that. It could have been mailed any time.
What's the point of the rule that says delivery is complete upon mailing if it doesn't count until it's received?
Because it relieves the AAA of the responsibility of delivering by mail. In other words, the rule is the parties consent that legal delivery is by U.S. mail, not that it was in fact delivered under the Sargent case and under the statute. I don't know when it was delivered. How do I know when to start this clock ticking?
You look at the postmark.
Well, Judge,
Because that's what the rule said, delivery is complete upon mailing.
But the statute in Sargent says delivered. And the rule doesn't say delivered, it says legal delivery occurs upon mailing. And my...
Anselmo, I'll give you one minute for rebuttal, even though you used up your time. Okay, Ms. Anselmo.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Michelle Anselmo, and I represent the Appellees Electronic Data Systems Corporation and A.T. Kearney Incorporated.
When Section 12 speaks of an arbitration award being delivered or filed, what does it mean by filed?
There are some circumstances, not under AAA rules, where a judge or an arbitrator would actually have to file the arbitration award with the court in order to have it enforced. So in terms of filed, as it applies to this case, this is not that type of case. This is a question where delivery is really what's directly in conflict here and what's directly at issue.
And just one other question. Is it your argument that in the case of email, the time the email is sent controls when it's considered delivered for purposes of the 3A or of the FAA?
Yes. Actually, in this case, because the award was both emailed and mailed, there are actually two alternative means of delivery used here. When the email was sent to Mr. Leram on January 4th, 2006, actually the date that the arbitration award was issued, and it was received in Mr. Leram's computer inbox on that date, it, like the mail, had a postmark on it, but it was an electronic postmark. We have actually attached that in the record. When Mr. Leram, on the day following the transmission of the email, January 5th, opened the email, he saw that its date was January 4th, and as if he were looking at a postmark, he should then have known that January 4th was the operative date. In addition, here we have Rule 34 of the AAA Rules of Procedure for Employment Disputes, which provides, as Judge Sykes pointed out, that legal delivery is placing the award in the mail. So in this instance, Mr. Webster and his counsel seem to be fixated on actually having the award in their hands, and that a paper copy, a mailed copy, means something. He could have looked at the postmark again and at the date of the letter from the AAA. There's been no facts disputed in this case about when this was sent out, and at that point he would have determined that the appropriate date to start the clock running would have been, again, January 4th, 2006. Mr. Leram has attacked Olson versus Wexford, and I think what that case really stands for is that there are no exceptions to Section 12 of the FAA in the Seventh Circuit. There are certainly circuits that will allow for equitable tolling, but the Seventh Circuit has applied the statute of limitations in Section 12 very strictly, setting a very bright line, in some instances dismissing cases because they are 1 day late, 3 days late, even if they were filed in time. I do believe that the court's wording in Olson versus Wexford with respect to filing versus service was loose. But I think that the reason it was loose with respect to filing versus service was because that wasn't what the court was focusing on in that case. Olson versus Wexford dealt with a case where the dispute was actually not what told the statute of limitations, what stopped the clock running, but what started the clock running. There was a dispute in that case with respect to when was the arbitration award final? When does the date start? When does the clock start ticking here? And in that case, there was an award, and then there was a request for reconsideration, and there was an amended award. And what the court was considering was which of these awards was the award that started the statute of limitations. So when they speak about filing or service, that I think is akin to dicta, because that's certainly not what the court was focusing on in that case. Mr. Leram has also discussed the original signed award, the actual award, the award that was signed by the arbitrator, and I just wanted to address that as well. When AAA used email as the an acceptable means of delivery as per Rule 33 of the AAA Rules of Employment Disputes, they attached a copy of the award, which was in PDF version, which was signed by the judge. So to the extent either one of us as parties had any question about whether this award was the final award or whether this was the signed award that that was going to eventually dismiss the case, I think that was cured by the fact that we actually had a signed copy by the arbitrator, although it wasn't signed by ink, I suppose. But I think in today's world of technology, email is a regular form of delivery. It's an acceptable form of delivery, and certainly in this case, where the rules say that it's an acceptable form of delivery, where Mr. Webster and his counsel actually communicated by email with both the AAA and with myself, and where the AAA had communicated with both parties by email on other occasions, I think that to suggest that email is somehow unacceptable or unofficial is just incorrect. I also wanted to discuss as well Mr. Leram's suggestion that the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure should step in because the FAA somehow does not provide for its own limitations period. I think it's very clear when you read Section 12 that it is a statute of limitations that is built into the Federal Arbitration Act, and that it is a statute of limitations that is complete upon service of notice upon opposing counsel. While the FAA is unusual in requiring service to toll the statute of limitations, it's certainly not unique. And it's not confusing. It's very clear that it's service and not filing that tolls the statute of limitations. To the extent there is a gap in the Federal Arbitration Act, it is with respect to when do you commence the suit? How do you file the complaint? We submit that you could file the complaint contemporaneously with tolling the statute of limitations by serving notice. You could probably file your complaint or your petition or your motion, however you style it, at some point before serving notice or at some point after serving notice. The only important thing with respect to Section 12, with respect to this case and with respect to the Federal Arbitration Act, is did you serve notice on opposing counsel that you intended at some point in the future or that you had in the past filed an action to vacate the arbitration award? And it's undisputed that Mr. Webster did not do that, that his notice that he was going to serve complaint to vacate the arbitration award was not filed by the 3-month anniversary of the date of the delivery of the arbitration award. It was filed one day too late. And I think that in returning to Olson, the other thing that Olson stands for is that the requirements of Section 12 are not onerous requirements. 3 months is an ample amount of time to determine whether a party is going to appeal or move to vacate an arbitration award. And if an individual is unclear about when the 3 months starts running, if an individual is unclear about how to calculate the 3-month period after the delivery of the award, or if a party is unclear about whether they should be filing or serving to toll the statute of limitations, then they should exercise what I believe the court in Olson called a modicum of caution and ensure that they file before, in advance of the earliest date that the statute of limitations could probably run. I submit that in this case, what probably happened, based on the complaint that was filed with the court, was that Mr. Webster was mistaken about what statute of limitations did apply. And in applying the Illinois Arbitration Act statutes of limitation, which is the statute that was cited in his complaint as controlling the limitations period, he believed that he had 90 days to file a complaint. And not 3 months to serve notice that he was going to file a complaint. And unfortunately for Mr. Webster, in this day made all the difference. However, this court has recognized that harsh results may ensue if the statute of limitations is passed. And in this case, it was, even if only by one day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Your Honors.
One minute, Mr. Larum. I can only give you 1 minute. Or it isn't fair.
I wish I had 30 minutes more. I did not make a mistake. I was confused about the Olson opinion, which talks about filing, and the previous opinion, which talks about filing. The reason the Illinois statute is referenced in the complaint is because I'm looking at a Seventh Circuit opinion that talks about filing, and 9 U.S.C. 12 ostensibly is a service limitation. I didn't understand the legislative history. Therefore, I thought I had two limitation periods to satisfy, a filing one, and there's a lot of case law from this court about deficient federal statutes. If they are deficient in terms of a filing limitation, you go to a state statute. But I marked the beginning from the receipt of the original award. And I refer the court to my supplemental declaration in the record. I sent counsel one email out of 100 different communications. The predominant form of communication in that case was fax and mail. And I did not receive documents from counsel, as she says in her declaration below. And last point, with respect to your question, Your Honor, on Federal Rule 3, I refer you to West versus Conrail in the reply brief. The U.S. Supreme Court did use Federal Rule 3 and breathed it into the NLRB. So,
thank you, Mr. Mayor.
In the same fashion. And I ask the court to please reverse and remand for further proceedings.
Thank you. Thank you.